I'm speaking with RFERL's Bruce Panier, who's in Osh at the moment in southern Kyrgyzstan. Bruce, can you describe the scene in Osh?
Yes, the scene in Osh, of course, it's very, very tragic to walk around town. Some neighborhoods were fairly untouched by what happened, but there are neighborhoods here that are where the buildings are just absolutely burned out, and the fire was so hot it caved in the roofs of homes, mostly Uzbek homes that we've seen, but the Kyrgyz suffered too. Downtown, it's the same. You can go to any neighborhood, you'll see the damage and destruction, broken glass, gutted buildings, burned cars, and burned like to just the frame of the car. Seats burned out, tires melted, the whole kind of thing. And it's true in the center, too. There are neighborhoods right in the center of town where the main bazaars are, and buildings are just absolutely gutted by the fire. They're still smoldering in some places from the intensity of the heat, so there's still smoke coming up from some of these places. But, and it's true on both sides. It's not just the Uzbeks that suffered through this. The Kyrgyz certainly suffered a lot. They have neighborhoods where it's all burned, too. Horror stories, certainly, from everyone wants to talk to you, and the stories they tell are absolutely gruesome about what happened.
And
there's
been a lot of reports. Sorry to interrupt. Is it possible to get a clearer picture from speaking to people of what actually happened?
It is possible to get a little bit clearer of a picture, but like I said, of course, the Uzbeks have their version of the story, and the Kyrgyz have their version of the story, and the level of violence seems to have been equal on both sides, and the tactics that the two sides used also seems to be equal. So it's while you can get a little bit clearer of a picture about the chronology of events, when it started, where it spread to, it's difficult to say exactly who provoked the conflict. The Uzbeks will say that the Kyrgyz came to their neighborhood, and the Kyrgyz say the Uzbeks showed up in their neighborhoods. So, it's hard to believe everything everyone says. I understand entirely because, of course, on both sides there's been a lot of suffering and a lot of death. But it's really difficult to say. I guess the truth lies somewhere in between what they're saying right now. So, I think fear sparked a lot of this stuff. The army did their best, as far as I can tell, to try to keep the two sides apart. But unfortunately, what happened, at least a couple of cases, was the army came through in armored vehicles, and the Kyrgyz crowds, at least in a couple of neighborhoods I went to, just followed the armored vehicles right in. The soldiers were shooting in the air to disperse the crowd. Unfortunately, a lot of the Kyrgyz groups seemed to have taken that as a chance for, they were going to open up an avenue for them to get into the neighborhoods, and the soldiers really didn't stop. They just drove through the neighborhoods, hoping that the show of force would be enough to keep people apart. But it worked kind of the opposite way, where they looked at the armored vehicles as actually providing a safe passage right into these neighborhoods. So,
and what
very
is
sad and unfortunate.
What is the government doing now to restore order?
Well, I'll give the government credit. They actually have done, the soldiers that came in, and I know the Uzbeks are still afraid to come out and talk to them or anything, but at least two different Uzbek neighborhoods that we went to were being guarded by Kyrgyz soldiers, and they put tanks out on the road. The Uzbeks didn't come out. I mean, they were still back there in the neighborhood, but there was no possibility for anyone to get at them. In the meantime, of course, humanitarian aid is coming in. Again, the biggest problem is going to be that the Uzbek population here is just afraid to come out of their homes, wherever they're hiding, and go and seek help because they don't think that they'll be able to make it to where these places are without being harassed or worse. So while there is some aid getting in and the government's doing everything possible to tell people that it's safe to come out and safe to return to your home, there's still a lot of reluctance to actually believe those stories. On an informal level, things seem to be actually going much better. I was at the main mosque in Osh yesterday, and while the crowd was far fewer than is normal for Friday prayers, it was mixed, Uzbek and Kyrgyz, and when they came out of the mosque, I talked to both Kyrgyz and Uzbeks, and they were talking words of peace, and the one Kyrgyz man actually said that, if you work for the radio, please get on the radio and tell our Uzbek brothers and sisters it's safe to come back. There's nothing will happen to them, and we want them to come and live like things were, before all this stuff happened. So that's going pretty well, and like I said, in neighborhoods there are some, because the neighborhoods are right next to each other and some are mixed. And so there is some, again, informal talks between the two groups about let's put this all aside as much as possible and let's try to get on with our lives. And we understand that Uzbeks and Kyrgyz lived here for a long time, so, bury the hatchet, basically, and go on.
And have those talks, those reconciliation talks that you're talking about, have they been talking about the return of the refugees to Osh?
Yes, absolutely. I mean, it's surprising, but pretty much everyone I've talked to really wants those people to come back. The people there said, again, that it's safe, and these people have been living here, and they're citizens of Kyrgyzstan just like everybody else. And there's no reason for them to be worried, But again, the intensity of violence was such that a lot of people just aren't sure, if words are enough, or, is this really going to come to pass, or is this just a trick or something? And I don't believe it is a trick. I think they really do want them to come back. But as I said, in both Kyrgyz and Uzbek neighborhoods, the violence was so intense, and it really wasn't. A lot of reports in the West say, well, they had guns and they were shooting, and that's certainly true. But from talking to people about what happened in their neighborhoods, the fighting was close in and like hand to hand. It really was sticks and people being knocked to the ground, doused with gasoline and lit on fire, having their throats cut. So when it gets to be that, where you're practically face to face with people, it's going to be hard to like engender any trust among the people for a little while. It was too much for a lot of people. But having said that, I would also add that the refugees that went to the border, a lot of them are coming back simply for the reason that there's nothing there for them at the border. Uzbekistan still has the border closed, as for last I heard, and there's no shelter, there's no food, there's no medical attention there. So they're actually better off coming back here. And also, even in the Uzbek neighborhoods, there are some doctors, not just from outside the country, but Kyrgyz doctors have actually volunteered to go in and try to treat the wounded. And some of them seem to have succeeded. So there is some medical attention being given, and hopefully that will help to foster more trust between the two people. But right now, it's, like I said, you can walk out on the street and you will not see Uzbeks in Osh walking around at all. You'll see Kyrgyz, but you won't see Uzbeks right now.
I mean, you've talked a lot about reconciliation, but there must be extreme anger and fear on the Uzbek side. Have you seen much of that, or is it just that the Uzbeks are holed up in their neighborhoods and you just can't get access to them?
No, actually, I've been in a couple of Uzbek neighborhoods, and yesterday I went to one Cheremushki, which is not far from where I'm talking right now, and of course the whole neighborhood was pretty much destroyed. Everything was burned down for the most part, but a few buildings were still holding up there. And since I do speak a little bit of Uzbek, I went down the street and calling out to people in Uzbek and Russian that I was an American journalist and I wanted to talk to them. And finally, one guy came out the window of his house. It had been burned, but he was looking to see if there was anything left in there that was usable. And he came out and talked to me for a minute, but his main question, he didn't want to so much give me an interview as he was interested in how I got in, on what road I took to get in, and were there any people on there? Was it safe to go out? He wanted to make sure there was no one standing around, and he didn't care. I mean, I'm sure he meant Kyrgyz, but in the meantime, he just said, I'm not going out there and walking along that road to try to get to where I'm going unless I'm sure that there's no one there. And I told him there wasn't, and he left right away. So, I mean, he was Uzbek, and that's the situation where he didn't want to see anybody. He was that afraid. And he only talked to me for like 2 minutes and said, I'm out. If there's no one there, I'm going right now. So...
And walking around Osh, are there troops on the street? I mean, is the government making a show of force to give people a sense of security?
Absolutely. Not only do they have their regular soldiers who are out here, and the police are back on the street, but they called up all kinds of different people. The neighborhood that I was talking about that was guarded by the Uzbek neighborhood that was guarded by Kyrgyz soldiers was guarded by soldiers who were veterans from the Afghanistan war. They've called up a lot of people, so it's kind of strange to walk around and see. You can see people in various kind of uniforms. Some are the camouflage or green uniforms of the army, but you can tell the people who are called up because, some of them are wearing tennis shoes, some of them have shorts on, different shirts, but of course they all have guns and some insignia that indicates they're from the government on some level or another. But while most of the troops are actually regular army, that I would say probably a quarter, maybe a third, are people who have just been called up in the last week to come down here and try to keep order in the city.
And are those troops or security personnel, are they in the Uzbek areas as well?
Yes, they are kind of. They more guard the outskirts of the Uzbek neighborhood. They don't really go in. Again, there's not much trust in some of these places at the moment. So they seem to have just blocked the road to keep the two sides apart. But again, it's not like the Uzbeks see the army there and get the feeling that or the sense that everything's safe and they can come out and go and talk to the soldiers. I'm sure they're glad for the protection, but they're not certain enough of the situation to actually come out and try to go and see the soldiers or talk to them. And I think there's very few bazaars that are open, but the ones that are open, you don't see any Uzbeks going to going to get food or anything there. There was a couple of places that I passed yesterday that were run by people who weren't Kyrgyz and Meskhetian Turks, or actually even Slavic peoples. When I talked to those people, they said, yes, sometimes Uzbeks come up and do buy stuff as quickly as possible and then return to wherever they came from. But there's not a whole lot available, you know, some fruit and some vegetables, but not very much because the situation just hasn't returned to normal yet. And the main bazaars aren't open yet either.
And you've been this morning to the local administration office in Osh. Any sense of what the authorities are doing to not just restore order, but deal with the situation?
Yes, they are. I mean, besides the show of security, I suppose you'd have to say it, you know, to try to bring troops out there and stuff, they are actually appealing by whatever media means they have to people to, one, certainly not give in to any provocations, but two, to reassure people that the situation will return to normal and that they do have the situation under control. It's quiet and it's becoming safer by the day, and that's true. So, through the media or whatever means they can, and like I said, there's still armored vehicles and stuff driving around, and I just assumed that, one, that was for security, but two, it was also a show to show people that they were in control of the situation and it was safe to come out. So there's some, but like I said, the intensity of the violence was so much that some people just aren't sure if this is real and what will happen when they come out on the street again. And, generally speaking, there really isn't anybody out on the street. You know, this city is usually packed with people, and there's neighborhoods that always have thousands of people, and you don't ever see any more than a few dozen people anywhere in this town walking around. It gets better day by day, but you could probably count the number of people that pass by in 10 minutes on both hands. You know, so it's still at that level. I mean, no one's really sure if this piece is going to hold, or is this just, you know, the pause or the calm before the storm. So,
Bruce, my last question would really be, what about local media? Are newspapers down there covering this? Is local TV covering this, or is there a blackout?
No. I mean, to the best of their capabilities, they are actually covering the news. And, again, they're being very, very careful about what they report. You don't hear or see interviews with one side or the other saying this is what happened in our neighborhood or something. It's more about the effort to restore order and get the city back on its feet. So it's not like they're ignoring the problem, but they don't really want to bring it up because it's still obviously a very sore point to try to get into. And they don't want to cover the event, what happened last week, as much as they want to cover what's going to happen next week.